Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights, all sourced from our SweetOps community. Plus, a live Q&A you can't find anywhere else. It's March 26th, 2025. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams to deploy their software faster. And we do this by leveraging our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 100 million times. So no matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help your team launch your software faster. Just go to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Answer a few quick questions and you'll book a meeting with me directly. So how can you maximize the value of today's session? Well, you can ask as many questions as you'd like. You can, if you're curious about our open source tools like Atmos or Terraform modules, this is a great place to ask. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/officehours. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session valuable, share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse, where you'll find the recording posted in a few hours. So with that said, let's jump into today's news and announcements. And I didn't do my cool little talking head thing today. All right, so here's what caught my attention. Michael shared the first one here. You know, Frank, I did not know that Pats were not fine-grained pats were not GA on GitHub, but they are now GA. So if that was precluding your organization from using them, well, good news is now you can. There weren't really any other updates that I could tell as a result of this. One of the nice thing when you do upgrade to this is that in the events log, you see the access token that was used that generated that, which improves your auditing. Let's see, they do have a roadmap for this. And what I would love to see, and I don't see it here, is, well, I guess it's not really related to this, but what we talked about last week, like we want STS for Pats or GitHub apps, right? So you can do very easy cross-account tokens. The fact, yeah, it's really this ironic thing because they say that you are not allowed to create bot accounts on GitHub, and yet you frequently have to use bot accounts. And it's this gray area where if you create them and use them as a good citizen, which obviously most of us, you probably won't have any issues. I remember though, like a year or two ago, a customer had created one of these as part of our onboarding process. And sure enough, it was flagged by GitHub and immediately shut down for violating terms of service. Not because of abuse, but because it was not a real account. It was a bot account. So the fact that they, Pats is a valuable thing, but I think that one of the ways they're really abused is for programmatic access by services, and that therefore they need a better story.
On my team, we recently created some service accounts for a valid use case, and they shut it down within about 35 minutes or an hour.
Really?
And so what we had been doing is we have like a group domain, and then with Google Workspace, if you folks are familiar with that, you can do plus and then an
Yeah.
alias. So we create multiple accounts using that alias, and they basically flagged it because we had way too many aliases on GitHub. And so yeah, this is the fastest they've flagged it. Usually they flag it randomly 3 days later, but
Yeah.
we actually got it unsuspended later that day. They were fine with that. We told them it's a service account and why we're using it. And so I think their policy may have changed. If it
Okay.
were blocking you in the past, it seems like I was surprised that we were able to get it unlocked in a day. So yeah. The other thing is on that list that you shared with the fine-grained access PATs, it mentioned, I think it highlighted they might add packages. Like right now, you can't use fine-grained PATs to access GHCR private repositories. So I'm hoping on the packages we can finally get that. That'd be nice. Versus right now, you have to do a personal access token, And basically all you need another service account just for the container registry, unfortunately. And there's like a whole GitHub issue open for the lack of support around this and the docs being confusing. So hopefully that packages thing that they're talking about there is going to include GHCR at some point.
And that's a first-class thing. I mean, they're investing a lot in packages, and we saw the other posts we talked about last week about GitHub Actions now moving in that direction, so you can push an artifact of an action to packages. So yeah, that's an oversight. They need a policy like what Amazon was doing, like no new feature without API support, no new feature without PAT support.
Yeah, they really do need that. There's an amount of things that you can do in the UI that you cannot find an API call for on GitHub.
Yeah.
I guess would their answer now be to use like a GitHub app or something like to do all this? Like
I
what?
mean,
I don't
you
know.
can't use a GitHub app for packages either. There's like this whole GitHub issue that
Really?
I've been tracking really closely, and you can't pull. Yeah, there's like no way around it beyond a personal access token or make the package public. I've definitely spent a fair amount of time trying to find a nice clean solution for this. And yeah.
I know another
Interesting.
one we've recently dealt with. I think we found an alternative workaround, but you can't cancel deployments using a GitHub app. You have to use a PAT. The workaround we had was you can cancel the job, which has a similar effect, but you can't cancel the deployment with the PAT. Oh, sorry, with the app. You have to use a PAT. I think there was even a use case where you can't use a PAT. But I guess that must have been addressed at this point. I was going to say that there were limitations of fine-grained tokens, so you have to have a full, like classic PAT, but I don't remember what that was. All right. Oh yeah, here's an announcement from Cloud Posse. So we wanted to bring more attention to something that Igor on our team has been working feverishly on. So. This is a large initiative at Cloud Posse we're calling automated component testing. And we've finished the first tranche of components. We've updated about 27 of 160 components to use this new automated testing framework. These are the components that exist in a separate GitHub organization that we manage called Terraform, Cloud Posse Terraform Components. What we have done over the last 6 months or so is refactored all of these components that were in a Terraform monorepo into this separate organization so we can manage the contributions and pull requests and releases and release notes and all of that in a very standard way, but differentiate between these opinionated components and our child modules. So in Cloud Posse parlance, a component is it the top level most building block in your infrastructure. So something like a Terraform root module or a Helm chart are components. So these are our Terraform components that are what we use in our commercial reference architecture. Everything is public and free here. So if we were to look at one of these components here, you'll see how we've gone about implementing automated testing. One of the things that we did in our components is that we moved all the source, all the Terraform source into the source folder. This consists of the root module. And then we have a conventional test folder at the root. This sets up the entire test suite for testing components. So why are we not using open source, like the native testing in Terraform? So the native testing in Terraform supports bringing up your other dependencies in order to test the current module you're in, but it has no knowledge of the concept of a stack the way that we do things at Cloud Posse. So what we have here is in each one of these components, we have set up a small representation of how to deploy this particular component, like the VPC. That involves defining the stacks. For example, for the tests and importing them in here from different use cases. So in this case, we have looks like five different use cases that we are testing this component in. The tests themselves are all written in Go using the Go test framework and a hybrid of the TerraTest library for testing Terraform or infrastructure more generally. And we also created our own library of helpers. So we announced also in the same post here the test helpers library. It's a Go library that we use to run component tests for our infrastructure. So the goal with all of this is so that we can ultimately say that we can provably reproduce any component in a stack, but eventually an entire stack, and eventually an entire AWS organization. That is, that we can fully automate the organizational units, the accounts in the organizational units, the services running in the organizational units, the baseline configuration, platform services running inside of there, and so forth, and have an automated, repeatable process for doing all of that using Atmos stack configurations and Terraform. So it is a it's a high, very high bar that we need to reach to accomplish that, and this is one of those steps to getting there. This is also a call to action. If this is interesting to you, especially if you're using Atmos, especially if you're using our reference architecture, we could use some help. So what we've done is we've created a board with all of the components that need tests and the ones that are remaining so that we can get help from others in implementing those. We are continuing at our own pace to implement those. It's still a top priority, but we could definitely use some help. And it's if you enjoy Go, if you enjoy kind of this level of rigor when it comes to infrastructure, then we'd love to talk to you and reach out to us on Slack. You can find me on Sweet Op Slack. Just find Eric Osterman on there, or Igor. All right. So, any questions on automated component? Oh, and we have I also didn't mention that we have a very thorough a step-by-step guide for how to implement automated testing for components and stacks that you can follow. It also goes into how to implement the actual Go code to get started and structure the tests and in the repository. Okay. Any questions on that before we move on? All right. The next one, man, I ran out of time preparing for office hours today, so I did not get to dive into this one too deeply. Seems pretty terrifying that there's a unauthenticated remote code execution vulnerability in the open source Ingress Nginx, which is like the de facto ingress for anybody not on like a major cloud like AWS and Azure. I'm curious, on like DigitalOcean, do they have their own Ingress controller or do they rely on Nginx Ingress in their Kubernetes clusters? Anyways, they did some survey of 6,500 clusters, including some Fortune 500 companies. And 43% of those 6,500 servers were vulnerable, apparently.
It looks like from the DigitalOcean docs that they use this, the Nginx Ingress controller.
So, yeah, that's case in point. So, I didn't look into what the level of complexity was to take advantage of this. So anyone know more about this attack? So, Cloudflare has introduced an interesting honeypot that I believe is available on an opt-in basis to all customers, even on the free plan. And this is pretty awesome. So One of the problems when you try and defeat bots is it's an arms race, because if you return like a proper status code like 401, then they're just going to find out what they did to trigger that, permissions error. It's kind of like at your bank, right? The reason why it's such a pain in the ass when something goes wrong and they just say, some generic message like that account doesn't exist when you know it's your account. It's because they're trying to thwart the constant arms race of like password stuffing to find logins. So what the AI Labyrinth is doing on Cloudflare is, if they detect that a bot crawling your site against your configured policies is using AI or is using automated patterns, they can send them on a wild goose chase down a site with infinite amount of content that is all gibberish and garbage. So it will basically waste the resources of the crawlers doing it. They'll get stuck on your site. And since Cloudflare isn't really charging for bandwidth, there's no cost for you to do that. It's going to be interesting if this ends up polluting AI language models that were stuck crawling gibberish.
I many moons ago I worked just have to phrase it without saying who I worked for a very large e-commerce platform who had a competitor that every day was running bots to check their pricing and then setting the competitor's pricing based on this very large e-commerce player's pricing. So we detected that and essentially returned a different set of pricing when we determined that it was that bot that was crawling it, and that the competitor suddenly was having 99% off sales on a bunch a whole bunch of other things, and that only lasted for like 2 days before they figured out what was going on, and they had to stop crawling the other site because they were losing so much money on the products they were selling, because they were going like 10% less than the price that was on the large competitor's website. So, yeah. So I'm sure once you can figure all this stuff out, there's a lot of interesting things you can do to figure out like how to. Well, if you know who it is, you could probably influence their business significantly, which is, I guess, their own fault because they're violating your terms of service. I'm sure by like. No, anyone who doesn't want to be crawled by AI probably has it in their terms of service saying that that's not permissible. So, at that point, use at your own risk.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that it was specific. Okay, AI crawlers and other bots. Yeah, specifically no crawl policies. But yeah.
Yeah.
So all the
If
above.
they don't respect those policies and they do it, then,
Yeah.
well, whatever happens to you happens to you. You ignore the no trespassing signs. If you get bit by the dog on the other side, that's your own fault.
That is a good analogy. Here was another one that I had bookmarked but didn't get a chance to read. It was basically how the deterministic builds in Nix sauce could have detected the XZ backdoor from last year. That you remember, that's the one with Giatan that made its way into the mainstream of multiple Linux distributions and showed a multi-year effort at introducing a supply chain attack. So the person who discovered the XZ backdoor, if you remember, did so because they were just trying to, they were, it was a developer at Microsoft was trying to build something, and they just noticed a huge slowdown in the performance of some library, and then started looking into XZ and realized, well, lo and behold, a backdoor had been planted. Something about though the and maybe Matt, you would intuit what that is in Nix that could have made this easier to detect.
Not off the top of my head, I would need to read this article probably to put two and two together.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'll have to follow up on that. Next one is I forget who it was that shared this with me. It's an MCP that lets you connect your AWS account to Claude or to you to your Claude desktop in this case, and then ask questions of it. So I don't know if it can take performative actions. That would be pretty scary, but cool idea. So this was just something I saw on Hacker News. It is in the very early stages, and yeah, this is the kind of project that will probably get abandoned, but I thought it was an interesting idea, so worth bringing up. Something I think we've thought of in some kind of capacity with Atmos. So what if when things change in your infrastructure, you could have webhook events on that? Obviously in AWS using was it CloudWatch events, you would be able to have similar functionality, but that is only on AWS. And if you're building things out across multiple systems, that'd be nice maybe to be able to trigger different to get events when different things are changing or modifying in your infrastructure. This is doing it by looking at your S3 backend. It only supports S3 at this time. And then it's using a polling model. So it's not using like some of the functionality of like subscribing to events in a bucket and being able to do this in real time. So for all those reasons, I think this is probably more a nice explorative project, not maybe something that has long-term viability. All right. Next project was this. I don't know if Michael is on the call today. He is not. So Michael was working on a project to generate mermaid diagrams from Terraform state. I wanted to get an update on where he's at with that. One of the biggest challenges when you generate automated diagrams is there's just too much information and it drives home 2 points. In order for diagrams to be really valuable to humans, they need to tell a story, and stories deliberately lack some level of precision. And the best storytellers know what information to leave in and what to leave out. So this is an attempt to generate automated diagrams for Kubernetes manifests, Helm charts, customized files, so you can understand what's going on. Obviously, in the simple case, it looks pretty good. And what I like about the author here is they showed what it looks like in the real case, deploying Kube Prometheus, right? You don't need this level of precision to understand necessarily what's going on unless you're a masochist. And it doesn't take too long before that explodes. I thought it was interesting just to see the complexity of ingress. Yeah, Minikube ingress. So just deploying the ingress controller. The number of resources that exist. And I know I often mock AWS diagrams that show, oh, just implement it with like a Lambda architecture. And now I realize, okay, it looks the same actually if you break it down and do it in Kubernetes too. So it's nice to have some level of abstraction on top of this so you don't have to look at it at the raw resource level. Next was you'll Recall a few weeks ago or a month ago, we shared Can I TF? This is a nice site that is tracking the differences between OpenTofu and Terraform, so you can understand what features you can use where. Let's see if they have one that we just had to resolve this past week. Yeah, so very, well, let's see if provider iteration, provider mocking. The thing we had to implement this past week was when you have your backend definition, you can now use variables in OpenTofu. And to use that, you have to pass dash var files when you call, well, okay, when you're using Atmos and OpenTofu, you need to pass the var file to Terraform in it. But the var file argument is not valid in VSL Terraform, but it is valid in OpenTofu. So that was one of those differences that we just had to address in Atmos. Well, a similar service now exists for Kubernetes. Can I use it's being called here. And it's tracking all the different functionality and in what version it got introduced. And since Kubernetes is moving so fast, with so many contributions, that's a hard thing to stay on top of. I don't think I realized just the extent of the problem.
Is that actually canIuse.com?
Can I? No. It was, oh, can I
Oh,
use
okay. Yeah, because
Jerome.dev?
the C one is this version for CSS.
Oh, really?
If you do can't like can I use the real way you spell like that, it gives you like all the browsers and like every possible thing that you could use in like across all of there.
Yeah, that's one that you've used in the past.
Yeah. Especially when before frameworks like Tailwind and all that became like really popular and you're always writing your own native CSS, it was crazy about how much variation there was among all the major browsers and how you did certain things and which CSS new CSS attributes were supported and how they're supported differently across browser and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, you've definitely converted me on Tailwind. I just added that to Cloud Posse Docs. I can't go retroactively, but at least I can use it moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. Big plus one.
All right. And my last announcement is just a couple of improvements in Atmos if you're an Atmos user. First one is that we merged support for two things related to Atmos's configuration. So, since the beginning of time in Atmos, in your stack configurations, you could import other configurations. But the Atmos CLI configuration, as we call it, the configuration of Atmos itself was always a monolithic file. As we've added more and more functionality into Atmos, that file has grown and grown and grown. And there are other ways that you might want to organize what you have in the Atmos configuration. So we've introduced two things in Atmos now. I think this was released in 160. Five days ago. I thought we cut a release since then. Maybe this wasn't released yet then. I thought it was released in 167, but
Yeah, there's a release that was 2 days ago. 167 was 2 days ago. 5 days ago is 166.
then I think we have a problem with our release commenter getting tripped up by the pre-releases now. No good deed goes unpunished. Usually we comment on our pull request in what version this functionality was released. So that's what Matt and I were just talking about. All right, so what is this? So now we have a automatic imports from a directory called atmos.d in your project. So for example, maybe you want to put your stack path configurations and settings there in a stacks file, or you want to put your logging configuration in a separate file. or a very practical one is if you're using Atmos a lot with custom commands are a great way to add a veneer over all of your DevOps tooling to provide a consistent interface to your users. So with custom commands in Atmos, you can add any command you want to be in underneath Atmos. And when you run Atmos help, you'll see it and it'll accept the same flags and parameters that you'd want it to do. So when you start leveraging custom commands, your Atmos configuration can get pretty large. So this is another reason why you might want to use the Atmos.d or the imports functionality so that you can just import those configs. So imports support glob patterns. So you can use greedy globs like star star or regular globs and wildcards to import configs. Also, full disclosure, we had an oversight. We were supposed to support the bang env function in the Atmos configuration. And this is how you can read any environment variable and inject it into your Atmos configuration. That was supposed to always have been there, but it wasn't. So we added that into the Atmos configuration. So that's this update here. And those configs for imports can actually also be remote URLs. And we automatically inject the GitHub token if it's available. So, for example, if you want to create a centralized repository with Atmos baseline configurations that you want to import into your config, you can do that now using the import option. So, really powerful.
And I don't think you mentioned it as part of this, but this is really useful if you're not, especially if you're not using a monorepo pattern for your infrastructure. Like if you're in a large enterprise where you have many repositories that are using Atmos, you can have like all of your custom commands and all those kinds of things centralized in one location, and then only have slight variations for the local repository in your local Atmos config.
And here's what that looks like. All right. The other feature was related to OpenTofu, actually, why I was just showing you cani.tf. So there was a user who reported this that they were migrating from Terragrunt to Atmos, but one of the challenges was the var file to the init argument was not getting passed. When you use Atmos, one of the things we do in Atmos is we deep merge all that configuration and we generate a var file that's ephemeral and has all the values to all the variables that you want to pass to Terraform. So Terraform init, if you're using those variables now in your backend configurations, will need to know those variables. So that's why passing the var file is a requirement. The way we implemented it is underneath in your atmos.yaml under the Terraform section of components here, you would add init and then pass vars. And that's a feature flag that you can turn on or off. So Atmos doesn't know anything about the command you're running. Atmos doesn't know that it's calling Terraform. Atmos doesn't know it's calling OpenTofu. Atmos is just running a command. So it's up to you to configure the behavior when calling that command if it should pass that flag. Okay, so that's it for announcements. Anything else interesting this week? All right, let's move into Q&A then. Any questions we can address on the call today? This is open-ended. Doesn't have to be necessarily a technical question. It could be strategic, architectural, philosophical.
Never want to hog the mic, but I've always got questions.
That's where Michael.
Yeah, no doubt. For ECS, I'm just wondering, it's been a while since I've actually gotten a lot of like hands-on with ECS. And I'm just wondering, like these days, what are folks doing for automating task definition deployment? Specifically, I'm recalling in the past, my mode was setting up pipelines to actually update the task definition along with or after the image was pushed to ECR. And I'm just wondering, is there anything like fresh and new in that particular space? Follow-on question would be, has anyone moved to Cloud Runner or App Runner, whatever the AWS version of the container runtime is?
So definitely a question that's come up a lot in the past. I think the most recent time was probably over the Slack window, the 90-day Slack window, so I can't link it to you. We are also on the hunt always for what is a better way to deploy ECS tasks and services, especially if you're also using Terraform. There's a conundrum, right, when you're deploying with Terraform to ECS, is that there's kind of the infrastructure side of it and the CI part of it, the CI being where you build your artifact like a container, and the CD side where you deploy it, which is the Terraform side. And how do you fuse those two systems? We've always been looking for I've always kept an eye out for AWS Copilot Fly. But you probably remember the news on that, that there's some concern that this might not be maintained in the long run. Let's see if there's any updates here. 5 months, 2 years. Yeah, no updates since reInvent, basically. So that's probably not the way to go. Then there's what we still use, which is Espresso. Espresso is how we generate the task definitions. Espresso is well maintained. Let's see here.
16 hours ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a good sign. There's been a lot of these over the years that do it. ECS deploy is another one. We chose Espresso because it's Go-based, single binary. You can run it locally, you can run it in CI very conveniently. It supports templating. It has its own manifest format and can perform a number of steps on your behalf. It does templating. It can replace the task definition. I don't know if it creates tasks or not for you, but it's quite nice for just what it does.
Yeah, it's funny that this problem, this class of problems, is exactly why like the serverless framework exists for serverless.
Right.
It's like, yeah, how do I deploy lambdas, but then also all the supporting infrastructure that ties into those lambdas and needs to be provisioned in lifecycle with the actual application itself.
Yeah.
It's
So
and then all these little things sprout up on the side to fix them, and then some become big.
is the issue that folks are trying to solve the fact that one can't, pretty much in any cloud provider, you can't stand up a service running a Docker container without supplying the image and the version of the image. Is that what we're trying to accomplish here? That you end up with
Not
CI/CD that needs to manipulate that, but you also have Terraform that references it?
necessarily for my case. I am using Terraform to build out all of the infrastructure, including code pipeline and code deploy, which takes templates and can build the task for you. And it works. Like it's good enough. I was just wondering if there was anything better or more efficient than the last time that I touched this, which was maybe about a year or so ago. I'm inclined to just go ahead with the same approach that I've used in the past, which works, but I'm always open to whatever the improvement is on the state of the art.
And if you're using code build, code pipeline, and the AWS suite of things, it is tighter and more nicely integrated. And probably gets you a good experience. We predominantly use GitHub Actions, and I think they're come with some trade-offs, therefore.
Yeah, so that's my pipeline, sort of like a two-step. The GitHub Action side builds the image and pushes it to ECR, and then ECR triggers the code pipeline.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, so I depend on both sides, which work well, and neither one really knows about the other. The code pipeline is just waiting for the new image push, and then it kind of takes off from there.
So I've always struggled with this paradigm, this deployment paradigm, and it's not uncommon. And I think it's especially in Kubernetes land, it's even more common, this idea where you deploy a Helm chart, let's say, references some container. It doesn't even need to be the container that you actually need in the long run, but some container, and then you set up some process which reloads that deployment when there's a new image pushed, maybe with a certain tag. On the one hand, super elegant, super nice, very simple to understand. You push a new image, ECR, it gets deployed where it's read, where sorry, what where it's configured or referenced. But it does it overlooks like the reality of what actually involved with deploying that container, and often that container might consist, might you know that service might consist of more than one container. The schema of the manifest itself changes, or like the parameters getting passed, the environment variables, and solving that problem. So we've always taken this approach where we deploy, like for example, if we're doing Kubernetes, we are always deploying the chart and the container at the same time. We're never just bumping the container and worrying about the chart as a separate life cycle, but clearly some do. Why I bring that up is, Michael, it sounded like you're doing something similar where you're treating the life cycle of the task and the task definition separate from rotating or redeploying a new version of the container.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. That's pretty much how the pipeline is set up.
Yeah, and the trouble with like that in a generic sense is like one version of the container image. Like in version two, you just introduce that you're using like SQS now to do some messages. So you also need to like the task definition needs to pass some environment variables that are the like the arms of the the new SQS queues that you set up. And if all you're doing is bumping the image, because a new image was passed to the ECR, like you're not taking into account that, and you probably just broke your app, right? Because now your app is going to load and it's going to be like, all right, give me the SQS queue, and then that variable is not there. So there's like not that complete end-to-end tie-in of like the entire thing, including the task being the artifact that needs to be deployed together, so I think that's kind of the danger.
Yeah, the one benefit though is with Terraform, where at least the way that I have it set up, the template for the task is defined in Terraform in that part of the configuration. So I can update the template and do a new plan and apply. And so now my template's in place. If I can get that in advance of the devs pushing the next image, you know what I mean? So that just having that template there and update, it doesn't affect the running application. Second part though is with the blue-green deployment, which is kind of built into the code deploy approach. If they do kind of jump in with that new image and the task definition isn't there, it's just gonna crash that, the green deployment, and it's just gonna roll back over to the blue deployment until we get it right. So it's kind of protected from both ends. It's just a herding cat type approach to make sure everybody's lined up properly.
But you have that, yeah, it's good you have that compensating control with the code deploy, blue green deployment.
Yeah, obviously that definitely works in this case. There are for sure some more complex cases where the blue green even won't protect you from that, but like I get it. Like every layer of complexity can have some fallback, some circuit breaker, some whatever to make sure that you don't actually break it. But it would be much smoother if we truly had a way to be like, here's our artifact, and the artifact is like a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Let's deploy it now. And that's a task definition. That's a new container. That's new assets in an S3 bucket. That's XYZ that all kind of go out together. That often happen with distributed applications there. So I still don't think we have a good tool or single tool or tool set that makes that easy to do. Anywhere in DevOps land today.
Yeah, which kind of brings my follow-on question. I don't want to hog the mic. I'll drop the mic here. But if anybody's using App Runner to sort of work around things, and when I've looked at it in the past, it's great for like sort of the single container application, web runner type stuff. But of course, we're working with applications that have multiple containers. They need to tie into other AWS resources, other resources inside of a VPC. And I recall like either you couldn't launch inside a VPC using AWS App Runner, or you had to do some sort of funky VPC connect to reach back into the VPC and reference stuff. I would like to use an Elastic File System. I mean, all the things that I can do with ECS, but I was hoping to get it perhaps with the ease of an App Runner, just saying, hey, here's my container, here's the port, here's the command to run it, have fun. And it manages everything else for me. So yeah, just wondering if anybody has taken approach with App Runner and had success with it, specifically with a multi-container application.
We have some Terraform
Silent
modules
gold.
for it. I don't know the I don't know what the lift is.
Cool. Yeah, I'll take a look.
All right. Any other questions? Well, if no other questions, maybe we wrap up a little earlier today. Great. Well, thanks everyone for your time today. This was a shorter office hour session. If you are interested in kicking the tires with Cloud Posse, go to cloudposse.com/meet, answer a few quick questions, and you'll book a meeting with me directly. We'll be posting a recording of today's session to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/cloudposse. And here's some follow-up items. If you want to get involved in our community, go to slack.cloudposse.com. We also syndicate our office hours as a podcast. So if you want to listen to it, however you listen to podcasts, that's a great way of doing it. And if you haven't yet registered for our weekly office hours, just go to cloudposse.com/office hours and register. Talk to you soon. Take care.